Are we good to go? Thanks. I thought I'd just start at paragraph six. So using market economics, proprietary food, grocery and liquor retail gravity model for Greater Christchurch, I have developed a number of demand and supply scenarios to estimate the potential future effects of the Business 4 zone proposed in Plan Change 31 on the Waimakariri Centre network. Those scenarios considered a lower and upper dwelling yield for Plan Change 31 and a corresponding lower and upper supply of food, grocery and liquor employment in the proposed centre that was deemed reasonable for a local centre providing for day-to-day shopping needs. The gravity model showed that no centre, including the nearby Mandeville Centre, would suffer more than minor adverse effects on centre amenity, vitality and vibrancy based on the food, grocery and liquor store supply assumptions modelled. As food, grocery and liquor sector effects are a good indicator of how other convenience retail and service activities may impact the centre network, I conclude that the distributional effects of the new centre that combined a range of convenience activities in Plan Change 31, so not limited to food, grocery and liquor stores, would not lead to any significant adverse effects on other centres in Waimakariri District. To ensure this outcome, I support a total gross floor area cap for the Business 4 zone land in Plan Change 31 of between 2,500 and 3,000 square metres. This is consistent with Formative's analysis, which indicated that total GFA of 2,700 square metres was likely to be sustainable if Plan Change 31 was approved. I understand that the applicant is proposing a total 2,700 square metres GFA cap as part of the proposed rules and ODP. While a tenancy GFA cap is another method that can help manage distributional effects either on its own or in combination with a total GFA cap, I do not consider that this is warranted in this instance. The logical retail anchor for the Business 4 zone will be a supermarket or grocery store. Full service supermarkets today start from around 4,000 square metres in suburban centres, and the total GFA cap in Plan Change 31 will already dictate a small size supermarket. In order to provide a functional mix of activities in the future centre, a landowner will be strongly motivated to ensure that the small supermarket does not take up too much of that total GFA cap. I consider that a supermarket in Plan Change 31 will therefore be at the small end of the scale, and that this high probability and low risk outcome does not need further regulation in the form of an individual tenancy cap. I consider that consolidating the total GFA cap in the Business 4 zone proposed on White's Road will maximise the social and economic benefits of providing convenience retail and service activity as part of Plan Change 31. Alternatively, a portion of the total GFA cap could be used to develop a small group of shops in the Business 4 zone land on Mills Road once the larger centre has been fully developed. In conclusion, given the housing densities and potential dwelling yield proposed for the plan change, provision of a local centre as part of the development is a key opportunity to ensure that residents in the plan change site, the existing Ohoka settlement and the adjacent areas have their supermarket and other convenience retail and service needs met in an efficient and effective manner. It is also an opportunity to establish a community focal point for the Ohoka settlement with associated amenities such as the potential for a market square and additional parking to support the Ohoka farmers market. Setting a total GFA cap of between 2,500 and 3,000 square metres GFA for the plan change site will ensure a functional local centre can develop that meets the day-to-day shopping needs of the community in the long term without generating any significant adverse distributional effects on existing centres, including Mandeville. Negligible adverse effects on the district's KACs or town centres are anticipated from a new centre of this recommended size. While Mandeville will face relatively more employment impacts compared to other more distant centres, these are temporary and not expected to result in more than minor impacts on total centre viability, vibrancy and social and functional amenity delivered to its trade catchment. While I consider there to be a number of economic benefits to consolidating the total GFA cap in a single centre, if a second centre of commercial zoning is to be retained in Plan Change 31, I recommend that it should be zoned in the context of PDP terminology at the lower level in the centre hierarchy, i.e. as a neighbourhood centre, and delivered within the same GFA cap for Plan Change 31. Its development should also be delayed until the large local centre is fully developed and could be subject to an assessment that demonstrates the economic performance and health of the Mandeville Centre to further ensure that both locations are sustainable as predicted by the modelling.
Thank you, Ms. Hampson. Just one small question from me. In paragraph 14, you're saying, without generating any significant adverse distributional effects on existing centres, including Mandeville. So I note that in his section 42A report, Mr. Willis raises the concern that there could be some adverse effects, including Kaiapoi. Are you including Kaiapoi here in existing centres?
Yes,
yeah.
I am, yes.
Very minor, negligible. Yeah, okay, thank you. That's all for me.
I just had a question whether or not, given the, we've read in the evidence about the importance of the farmers market, both to the local community and the wider area, I guess, in terms of distributional effects, have you looked at whether or not there would be any such effects on the operation of the farmers market by establishing a commercial centre within the development area?
Kind of. We have some data at work that allows us to track cell phones, and so we did a specific investigation as to where people who come to the Ohoka Farmers Market actually come from. And the significant majority are actually coming out of central Rangiora. I guess I had expected it to be a bit more broad, but they really are those urban residents coming down to a rural experience to buy produce in the farmers market. I don't think there's any risk that the commercial or business four zone will adversely affect that market, but I think it will complement it. And in fact, the market will actually help support those businesses on those days that the market is operating. So you'd expect to see people parking either in the facilities provided in the business four zone and coming across to the market, then possibly visiting some of the shops and cafes in the centre as well. So they might have a longer and perhaps richer experience.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Akhurst, and I've prepared evidence that basically focuses on housing growth and capacity and sort of the wider economic effects of Plan Change 31. So just starting at paragraph 5 of the summary. So in my opinion, Waimakariri District Council has not identified sufficient commercially feasible and reasonably expected to be realised land to cater for anticipated growth. This is primarily due to issues with both the demand projections underestimating likely urban environment growth and the capacity estimates, including land, unsuitable for residential development. My evidence shows that the proposed Plan Change 31 has the potential to address some of these shortfalls that will assist Waimakariri District in meeting its obligations under the MPSUD by providing additional residential capacity to meet demand in the short to medium term, as well as in the long term. Plan Change 31 will generate a range of economic benefits in terms of contributions to GDP and wellbeing that are long-term and sustainable. In addition, the opportunity cost in terms of lost agricultural production are low, and any retail and centre impacts are small and short-lived, as you've just heard from Natalie. I support the rezoning of the Plan Change 31 land from an economic perspective. So just in response to some submitter evidence, I've read the evidence of Joanne Mitten, Principal Planner of Environment Canterbury, and Mr. Nick Boyce, an independent planner who has presented evidence on behalf of Waimakariri District Council. Both planners believe that Plan Change 31 should be declined. Ms. Mitten focuses her assessment on whether Plan Change 31 gives effect to the MPSUD, specifically one in Policy 8 and the CRPS. In her assessment, her comments on capacity focus on the findings of the 2021 HBA prepared for Greater Christchurch and not the more up-to-date 2023 version. And that's in para 76 on page 18 of her evidence. In the 2023 version, notwithstanding the issues I have identified in my evidence in chief, the margin between sufficient capacity and shortfall is very slim, and any slight change in demand could place Waimakariri in shortfall. In my opinion, Ms. Mitten has failed to consider the change circumstances between the 2021 version of the HBA for Greater Christchurch and the 2023 version. The shortfall I have identified means that Waimakariri is failing to meet its obligations under the MPSUD, and Plan Change 31 is able to address that, at least in part. Mr. Boyce does not offer evidence on housing capacity in Waimakariri, nor on the shortfall that I've identified in my assessment. Instead, he focuses on whether Plan Change 31 meets a significant capacity threshold, if it contributes to a well-functioning urban environment, if it is able to be adequately or efficiently serviced by infrastructure, and if it is well connected along transport routes. So while in paragraphs 14 and 15, Mr. Boyce states that Plan Change 31 does not meet the MPS thresholds, including significant capacity, by paragraph 68, he finds that Plan Change 31 at between 850 and 900 lots does provide significant capacity. I agree with his final position. As outlined in my evidence, Plan Change 31 is of significant scale to meet the MPSUD threshold. It accounts for approximately 15% of total anticipated growth out to 2036. This is especially important given the identified shortfalls in capacity identified in my evidence.
Now, just before you answer any questions, Mr. Akers has had a chance to have a quick look at Mr. Buckley's evidence. We've only got one copy between us, but I think the commissioners have got some, and I don't think it has any paragraph numbers. So, Mr. Akers, given that you'll only be here today, now is really the only opportunity for him to comment on that. So, you just
sure.
might need to refer the commissioners to which page or part of the page
yep.
you're commenting on.
Sure. Oh, sorry, Mr. Wallace does have some extra copies. Thank you. So I've had one read through of this, and I've got some comments that are probably more general. So while I can't talk to the veracity of the numbers that are in here. From my perspective, in terms of the economics of it, I'm not sure that this contributes significantly to this hearing. The housing outcomes provided by Plan Change 31 are not necessarily comparable with those more intensive dwellings in Christchurch, and I note in here Mr. Buckley generates estimates of contributions to greenhouse gas that compare a more standalone housing arrangement within more intensive housing arrangements within a more urbanised area. So the households who will choose to live at Ohoka are not shopping between apartment and townhouse dwellings in Christchurch and a standalone house in Ohoka. They will be more choosing between different sort of peri-urban areas. So they might be choosing between the fringes of Selwyn district and other opportunities within Waimakariri, Pegasus or other locations. It makes the comparison in here, I don't think the comparison here then becomes a valid one, because in effect there is potentially no difference between choosing a standalone house in those locations and choosing a standalone house in Ohoka, and Ohoka actually sits significantly closer to Central Christchurch than, say, Pegasus or Woodend, and some of the areas in Selwyn that have been identified as being urban. And the final comment is that even council's experts agree that the higher density forms of development are not viable in Waimakariri, and therefore the principal alternative to Ohoka is not more intensive development, it is these other locations that I've talked about. So that's really all I have to say after a brief run through of this. But I'm happy to answer any questions on my evidence in chief.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that you've had very limited time to look through that, as has we as well. Could you just point me to the exact parts that you've just responded to so I've recorded that accurately?
Okay. So on page 4, alternative locations. I guess that's towards the end of the second paragraph. He's talking about a choice of locations for families, medium density developments elsewhere. And then further on in the following paragraph, he continues on talking about the alternatives, and then on the top of page, is that page 6, where he talks about high density development as 2 to 2.5 times more energy efficient than lower density residential. So whilst that may be true, I don't know. I don't think it's particularly relevant. So those are really the key areas I was responding to.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions, or maybe just one, on your evidence in chief.
Sure.
If I can run that past you. In paragraph 105, you've made the observation that as Christchurch continues to grow, opportunities for well-planned proximate residential developments offering a standalone house and land packages within commuting distance will become scarce. I'm interested in, does that change consumer behaviours when something becomes scarce and it becomes really tricky to try and secure that kind of ideal way of living? Does that then propel people towards those other housing solutions? Generally speaking,
and based on research that I've carried out in a number of other jurisdictions in New Zealand, where we asked people what motivates them to choose the location that they live in and what motivates them about choosing the housing typology that they choose, people make trade-offs. And the trade-offs are usually around things like private space versus proximity. So it's very difficult in small economies, such as, say, Rangiora or Kaiapoi, for more intensive forms of residential to be successful because the trade-off is not significant. It's not like you're choosing between the edge of Auckland, which is an hour and a half from the CBD, versus being close to Auckland. You're choosing the difference between being 30 seconds walk away versus being, you know, a minute and a half drive away, and so those trade-offs are not significant. So as cities grow and mature, and as that has impacts on the price people are having to pay for standalone, people then do start reassessing what their actual needs are, and they will start to make these trade-offs. But there's a lot of, not resistance, there's a lot of history in cities like Christchurch, where people for a long period of time have chosen standalone dwellings, and it is quite a sea change to go from that environment to much more intensive. It will happen over time, but there will always be a portion of people, young families in particular, people who just appreciate that sort of open space, they will always look to choose standalone dwellings on the fringes of city. For them, those trade-offs, the trade-offs of more intensive forms of housing are not sufficient.
That's really helpful. And one more question for you is, okay, so Mr. Boys, in his planning evidence for Waimakariri District Council as a submitter, disagrees that the plan change will help facilitate a variety of dwelling typologies and dwelling options. And he states that the that there's only two zoning densities are proposed to achieve a minimum net density of 12 households per hectare averaged over the residential two-zoned land. So I guess what I'm interested in is your response to his critique of the conclusion that you've reached in that regard.
Okay, well, I'm not a planner, but my response is that in compared with the options that are available currently, Plan Change 31 increases the diversity of choice and provides for a wider range than is available today. That's
So your expertise is considering the existing, what's proposed, and the difference between?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sorry, Mr. Oakes, I didn't have any specific questions on your evidence in chief, but just following up on your comments in terms of the greenhouse gas emissions, and we have only just seen Mr. Buckley's memo, and perhaps these questions might be better directed at him, but I'm just understanding in terms of being able to model or understand the costs and benefits of, well, on a very simplistic level, cows versus houses. Is there any sort of standardised approach to how that exercise is done for the purposes of evaluating the costs and benefits of this particular type of activity or plan change?
I think that's exceedingly difficult because we need cows and we need houses. So it's... And they're both completely different in terms of their footprint, environmentally, financially, economically. I think it's the most appropriate way to do it is to assess your residential options, comparing Ohoka with, as I said in my comments, the principal alternative to Ohoka, which I argue is not intensive residential in Christchurch. It's by comparing it with other development options in the sort of the urban fringe, the sort of the peri-urban area, and I think that's the appropriate assessment. Comparing houses with cows, I think, is too difficult, and it's almost meaningless because
guess that's probably I was being too kind, but I was just struggling to understand the value to this process of trying to calculate less cows than houses or more houses than cows.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, so using geographic information systems, or GIS as I'll refer to it, is and publicly available data, I prepared a series of development constraint spatial maps that provide a visual representation of what areas in the Waimakariri district are subject to development constraints and how many constraints affect each area. These maps are appended to the evidence of Mr. Walsh. I also have reviewed the new development areas published by the Waimakariri District Council as part of their proposed district plan review. Based upon the spatial analysis using exclusions provided by Mr. Walsh and the memorandum attached at attachment A of his evidence, I have provided analysis that the areas provided in the proposed district plan may be significantly reduced based upon the interpretations of the restrictions as set out in Mr. Walsh's evidence. The Waimakariri Capacity for Growth Model 2022, prepared by Formative Limited, presents figures for the development capacity within the existing urban areas of the district. The raw data from this growth model was made available via email from Matthew Bacon, the Waimakariri District Planning Manager, on 23rd of June 2023 to the applicant, and it was subsequently passed on to me. This was in the form of an Excel spreadsheet, and I was asked to review this data and presented it as a spatial representation using GIS. I understand that Mr. Walsh queried with Waimak District Council whether there was any report to accompany this Excel model provided by Formative, and was informed that the model consists only of the Excel file and no report has yet been completed providing further detail on the model. The Excel spreadsheet provided includes fields for land parcel IDs, zone names, townships, land areas, building counts, medium term feasible yield and long term feasible yield. So the ID field from the formative data set matches with the property parcel IDs that are assigned by Land of Information New Zealand, or LINZ. The formative data set was then referenced into a piece of software called QGIS, matching the ID fields from the formative data set and the LINZ primary parcel data set to provide a spatial representation of the parcels identified by formative. So if you were to look at Appendix 1 attached to my summary, these are the parcels highlighted in yellow. I then undertook analysis of the formative data set and its relation to the LINZ cadastral information to highlight areas meeting any of the following criteria, which indicate that residential development and or intensification is unlikely to occur. So that was parcels whose purpose is for utility or local purpose reserve, parcels with a designation by a requiring authority, and parcels that have areas subject to esplanade provisions such as creeks, streams and rivers. Parcels matching these criteria are then shown with red hatching over the yellow parcels in Appendix 1. A cursory visual assessment was also undertaken to identify other examples of parcels that Formative had identified as providing development capacity, where in practice development is unlikely, accounting for the parcel shape, land use, natural features such as water bodies, etc. I'll now show some examples on screen highlighting where residential development and or intensification is unlikely to occur, and I'll kind of step through my process of how it all kind of came together. So I guess I'll start here with, this is all we received from WIMAC, which was just please see attached spreadsheet and no report, nothing else. So the spreadsheet looks a bit like this. It's got, parcel ID, just an ID field, which we figured out matched with the parcel IDs, land areas, township, zone names, building counts, capacity in the medium and capacity in the long term. And we're able to pull that into QGIS and match it up. So we can highlight here, these are all the parcels that identified in yellow. And we went through and did some sense checks as well, confirming that the parcel ID and the area matched up. And it was an easy way to kind of just double check everything, make sure it was what it was. And then looking through, I'll pull up a couple of just examples for where we found some errors. So this large parcel here that's highlighted red, this here is actually Rangiora High School, or owned by Rangiora High School. And this here, if we have a look at the title for this, we basically went through and found that, hey, this here's got the a designated purpose of high school reserves. So this is really shouldn't be included in an assessment of what's feasible for your residential development capacity. Another example right next door, this parcel here, that's actually the Lamb and Haywood Waimama Waimana Chapel, so the funeral directors, that also we thought was a bit inappropriate to be included in a residential capacity assessment. If we go across to the other, I'm just going to look at Rangiora for these examples, by the way. Another one here is this parcel, which is the Windsor Park in Rangiora. So that's, as if you can see here in the text, it's vested on deposit for recreation reserve. So that shouldn't be included. And they've got 8 lots in the long short term and 8 lots in the long term as proposed feasible development. Right next to it as well, this here is actually a stormwater basin, again vested on deposit for local purpose reserve. And another 4 lots in the short term, medium term, and 4 lots in the long term. Another one, just going through as a kind of final example, this parcel here. So if I do that, so we can see how that's highlighted through there. This is actually the Northbrook Stream. And Formative have said you can get 3 lots in the medium term and 3 lots in the long term on this lot. These here are kind of just some of the examples of what we kind of found so far anyway. We really didn't have enough time, we had insufficient time to undertake a comprehensive and conclusive spatial assessment of the formative model. However, my observation is that the emissions I identified in the initial assessment, as summarised previously by Mr. Atkhurst, highlights that there is insufficient robustness in formative's assessment to conclude how many parcels are available for further development within the Waimakariri district in the medium and long term. It is my professional opinion that the formative assessment of available developable area within the Waimakariri district is too broad to be relied upon to provide a realistic and reliable indication of development capacity, with a bias to overestimate the development capacity. In conclusion and in summary, the spatial analysis I've carried out using GIS has assisted Mr. Walsh and Mr. Atkhurst in providing further comment on areas of the Waimakariri district that face development constraints and on the current development capacity available within the Waimakariri district. Specifically, the growth model created by Formative was interrogated and multiple errors were found within the model in terms of failure to exclude areas of existing urban land that is unsuitable for development and intensification. Therefore, I consider the formative growth model has overestimated the available growth potential within the district's main centres. I agree with the conclusions and comments made within Mr. Walsh's and Mr. Atkhurst's evidence in regard to current development capacity and the areas where development constraints occur. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Thanks. It's been really nice, refreshing having a PowerPoint display to look at today. Thank you for that. I note that you've mentioned that you didn't have sufficient time to undertake a comprehensive and conclusive spatial assessment. With that in mind, is there any kind of specific limitations on the method that you've used with the QGIS that we need to be aware of when interpreting the results that you've presented?
The results I've presented so far, no, there is no limitation to it. It's all I could find by looking further is more errors. I just haven't had a chance to go looking for those.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. That's no further questions from me. That's all very clear. Thank you.
I just wondered whether or not, following the exercise that you've done, apart from presenting evidence in these proceedings, have you had any interaction with council staff about your findings?
No, I haven't actually had any interaction with council staff on my findings over these projections, other than through my evidence.
No discussions with council staff? Have you endeavoured to initiate any conversations with council staff around
matters? We've only recently been handed this information by council, and we had a look at it last minute beforehand, and this is what we came up with. This here was presented in the section 42A report, and we requested that data after that report was made available.
Okay, thank you.
So I can indicate that we've been trying to facilitate. So although Mr. Sexton hasn't done it directly, we have been trying.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Say you've been trying?
Mr. Walsh would probably be best to answer that directly when he's,
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions, but thank you. That's been really helpful.
So my full name is Christopher Francis Jones. I've got 22 years experience in the real estate industry, specifically in the Canterbury region, and 14 years experience selling down residential subdivisions in Canterbury, specifically in the townships on the fringes of the city. In that time I've sold over 2,700 sections. I consider there is considerably higher demand for housing in Ahoka relative to other surrounding areas such as Kaiapoi, Swannanoa, Fernside and Rangiora. I have absolutely no doubt that the product being proposed as part of this plan change will be in high demand, provided it is priced correctly. The amenities being proposed as part of this plan change will only increase the desirability of Ahoka to prospective purchasers. The inclusion of a polo field, pub, cafe and shops will provide a further point of difference for Ahoka. These amenities have been much needed in the area. Despite Ahoka being in the most popular lifestyle and residential location in North Canterbury by far, there have been a real lack of growth and in particular master plan supply. The proposed plan change will provide that supply, which in my view is significant, through a carefully designed and considered master plan that guarantees the desired outcomes for the development and the village can be achieved. I do not consider that the proposed plan change site would be economical for dairying. I note in response to criticisms that the site should be maintained as a dairy farm that I do not consider this would be economical use of the land. I do not consider the introduction of the medium density residential standards into the district plan will have a material impact on the development capacity in Waiakariri, and I consider there is a significant demand for residential housing in Ahoka relative to all other villages or townships in the Waiakariri district. Yeah, I guess if they're looking for the likes of the sites that are proposed in this plan, i.e. some larger sites, larger residential and what I call rural residential sites, the sort of 2,500 to 3,500 square metre sites, they'll either go further out, so keep driving until they can find that, or in many cases we see buyers that can't find that in this area end up having to buy a lifestyle, like a 4-hectare property, even though they don't want it, but they don't want to be in other areas, they want to be in Ahoka, so they'll end up buying a larger 4-hectare site.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. It's really helpful to have your intel on the local market and your experience in that sector. I did have a query around, you've used some approximations in terms of, you know, the relative proportion and the numbers and the 10 out of 10 and things.
Yes.
Is that coming from, like, do you keep records of your inquiries, and is that coming from a systems perspective?
Yep. And it's based around open home numbers, general demand, generally the first phone call for people in the outskirts of Christchurch. So if we leave the city aside, is what's for sale in Ahoka? What is for sale in Ahoka? What is for sale in Ahoka? If we have an auction, there always tends to be multiple bidders at the auction, and often it's when buyers can't find something in the Ahoka area that they end up going to another surrounding township. So it's based on buyer demand, always wanting something in Ahoka. And my note around there about the sites, it's, if we did have sections for sale here and in some other areas, we believe we would comfortably sell more in Ahoka first, because of its desirability.
Thank you. Do you keep a hard copy of that kind of data in terms of inquiries?
Not specifically for Ahoka, more for certain areas, but not necessarily specifically for Ahoka.
Thank you. And one question, I just wanted to be clear that I understood things correctly. In paragraph 6 of your evidence in chief,
you mentioned that there are very few sections to come available in Ohuka. And then in paragraph 9, you've said in the last 12 months, Bailey's has sold a significant number of properties in the area. Is that a contradiction, or have I misunderstood that?
Yeah, sorry, well, I think there's only been two residential sites for sale, which is the problem that we're trying to fix. The others have been lifestyle properties, so what I'd say the traditional 4-hectare lifestyle properties, and they still sell with extremely strong buyer demand, but that's the difference is residential versus lifestyle.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. I just had a question of clarification in paragraph 7 of the summary that you've just read out. You make reference to, in response to criticism about the site should be maintained as a dairy farm, I do not consider this would be an economical use of the land. Is that based on your expertise, or is that your summary of evidence that other witnesses have given?
That's in relation to the value of the land. So if a dairy farm was to come up for sale in this location, it would not be a viable dairy farm because the price of the already underlying zoning land value would be far in excess of what a dairy farmer could pay to run it economically. So my point was more around the current value of the land with its current zoning.
So your experience has been primarily in the residential market? Do you have any knowledge about the rural land market? So not rural lifestyle blocks, but if this block of land was available on the market for some other rural use or purpose, what would your comment be about that in terms of viability?
Yeah, again, the underlying land value would eliminate it as an option for any type of farmer that I can think of, especially arable or cropping or dairy farmer. But they would simply go another 10 minutes out of town and be able to pay what I call rural values.
And is that underlying value influenced by the fact that there is a market for lifestyle blocks in the area? Or can you tell me a little bit more about that?
My understanding around that is that it's because of the current zoning theoretically allowing subdivision into 4-hectare blocks, which are hugely popular.
Yeah.
There'd be a buyer that would buy it simply as a 4-hectare block subdivision land and develop it into lifestyle properties.
Okay. Thank you. No further
attend tomorrow. Given where things have got to with ecology, I'm actually thinking that maybe Ms. Drummond, who is coming, might be able to answer any of the questions, and we might be able to see after we've heard from her whether it would actually be necessary to have him at all, because things have moved quite a long way in terms of responding to Dr. Burrell's evidence and proposing some new provisions. So I'm wondering whether we could perhaps just leave that till after we've heard from her tomorrow and then see whether it would actually be necessary. I can send that to Ms. Brenbrook tonight so that you could have a look at that could be loaded up this evening. Yes, we could deal with it in the other way. The other matter that may help you is I had indicated that there was an additional witness, Mr. Vendrick, who was responding to Dr. Burrell. Because it's not just a summary, it's actually evidence responding to Dr. Vendrick, it is actually one of the longer ones. So Ms. Benbrick has actually uploaded that one. So if you wanted to have a look at that before tomorrow, that may cut out some time tomorrow. So I'm actually pretty optimistic that we are well within time and we may even finish early tomorrow, she says, famous last words. But
No, nothing else?